3, 2, 1, roll the footage. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Simon Severino, your host. And today we talk platforms, how you can use platforms to revitalize your business, to create an elevated customer experience, and to have a strategic advantage into this volatile world. I've asked Ted to come here on our show, senior partner at Prophet in San Francisco, Wharton alumni, author of Winning Through Platforms, 24 Ways to Win, which just has become number one in the marketing category on Amazon. So welcome everybody, Ted Moser.
Thanks for having me on, Simon.
Tell us everything about platforms. How do we start building a platform?
Sure. Well, Simon, I'd say first thing is to conceptualize platforms. We talk about how platforms are the second chapter in the most important business story of our lifetimes, which is lighting the customer journey through digital. You know, back in 1969, when Intel launched its first semiconductor, the customer journey was very cloudy to companies. A customer walked into a shop and revealed themselves and said, here are my needs, and bought something. That was their choose journey. Then they bought it at the cash register, left the store, and walked out into the darkness, and we lost all visibility of them as they entered what we'd call their use journey. So every customer has a choose side of their journey and a use side of their journey. The internet and networked PCs by the turn of the century lit the choose journey. We could watch the customer shop. Mm. We could talk as they were shopping online through our websites, and hopefully we could add enough value as they were deciding to earn their choice, and the whole e-commerce economy picked up. But as late as 2005, the use journey was still pitch dark for most companies. And it was 2005 to 2010 that two big things happened in terms of business infrastructure. Apple and Samsung created smartphones. And Azure, AWS, and Google Cloud Platform became cloud service providers. They decided to rent out their data centers to whatever entrepreneur wanted one. And all of a sudden that lowered the cost of getting into a platform business where I can watch my customer on their use journey and add value to them as they are using. And that's really our definition of a platform. Whatever gives you visibility to see your customer use what they acquired from you and interact with them while they're using it to add value to them and add value to your company is a platform. And so platforms are to the 2020s what websites were to the 2000s. They open up a whole new area of customer visibility, but they require a whole new business discipline of how I then manage my business with that visibility. And some companies have been at this for 10 or 15 years. Some of them are just getting to it now. So we try to write Winning Through Platforms in a world where every company needs one. You can't skip a platform any more than you could skip a website 20 years ago and thrive. Every company needs one, but that means all my markets will be platform crowded and I'm competing against other platforms. And there's no competitive playbook on how to get ahead, how to gain market share, how to gain advantage in a platform world. So we wrote that the book for that. It's a 24-step playbook, like any sports team would have a playbook. You know, you don't do them robotically. You say, what's my situation? What play is going to win for me in this moment of the game? And that's sort of the spirit of the book, so that whether I'm an advisor to companies, whether I'm a startup, or whether I'm a big company, we can have that playbook as a resource that we can use to say, what's the right next move in this platform pervasive world?
If a team of five people in the B2B space, let's say they are an advisory business, financial advisors, yes, management advisors, and they go, could I build a platform? Can they?
Well, I would say a couple things. One is they should probably understand the playbook to give better advice to their clients. So whether they become a platform, which is, I'm going to get to your question in just a minute, Simon, the book might give them a lot of great modular IP to share with their clients. We tried to write the book so every play in the playbook has a chapter. So 24 chapters, 24 plays. And every play is like a workshop. What is this play? What companies have used it? What's a framework of how to run the play? How do you do it step by step? And then what are the questions you need to answer? So if I were an advisor, I would first of all maybe take the book and use the IP to advise my clients. Then to your point, could I become a platform myself? I think the answer is yes. Service companies are going to need to become platforms. And you're going to have to address the question, what does it mean to watch my customers use my services? Is it as I'm delivering the project? Is it after I delivered the project? How are they using it? Right now, we don't have a lot of visibility of what a consulting client does with a consulting deliverable after the project's over. And one of the things that platform thinking will challenge these five-person advisor teams to do is say, what does that mean in my advice world? And could I add enough value after the project that the customer would give me visibility? Am I going to start tagging my presentations, let's say, and being able to track them with telemetry of what's happening to them? Are they on the shelf? Are they going viral? Are they being used? And how do I add value as my customer uses my deliverable digitally? So I think every time that companies offer a platform, there's a value exchange. The company tells the customer, if you let me watch, I'm going to add new value. And the customer decides whether they're willing to accept that privacy invasion, in a good sense of the word, with permission, and go, that value exchange is worth it for me. So I think it's going to be challenging for advisor groups as to what it means to be a platform.
Because one thing that we get asked often is, Simon, I don't have any switching costs in my model. As a consultancy, people can jump off me and two clicks away, there is the next competitor. And I don't want to imprison them or lock them in a bad way. I want to create so much positive value that they don't want to leave. And so that can be something like a platform, like a community or a template world.
You are seeing some companies do a couple of things in this space. One is, how do I go from a hub and spoke, me to just one client at a time, and with me as a consultancy in the hub? How do I go from a hub and spoke to a spoke to spoke, a peer-to-peer network? Mm-hmm. And can I help digitally organize that in a world where my customers will be sensitive towards the confidentiality of their information? They may only want to whisper it in the ear of their advisor, but not share it with anyone else. Mm-hmm. But if I get to the professional level, and if I organize cohorts that are non-competitive, and I sort of balance out the types of people I put together, there's a curation, not unlike a match.com in the consumer world, but think of it in the client to client, what's the right match? And then how do I create value digitally to let them be connected as well as connected to me? I think that the idea of catalytic community, that's one of the 24 plays. How do you create a great catalytic community is one of the 24 ways to win that we write about. How Atlassian created a 20 million person catalytic community that drives their customer base, helping each other, or how Glossier created a cosmetics firm on the back of a community. These are B2B examples in the case of Glossier, B2B in the case of Atlassian. But there's definitely best practices how to build digital communities. That's one play in the platform playbook.
Which of the 24 plays is your favorite and why?
Boy, I think one called Customer Coalition Edge. And here's why. Platforms are the successor to product line businesses, right? So product lines work under one logic. And there's been a lot of competitive strategy books written about how to win in a product line world. Platforms run on different competitive plays, different competitive moves, and different logic. One of the shifts is in a product line world, I think this product for this customer. In a platform world, I think this platform for this coalition of customers. And I can actually gain strategic advantage by designing a coalition that has built-in advantage to it based on who's in it. So the act of designing my customer coalition and then making it come into reality is an act of creative strategy or strategic creativity that I think is a really great one. So we talk in the book in that particular play that there are six archetypes of customers. I've got users, people hands on keyboard, hands on screens, hands on the steering wheel of the car, lying down on the bed that has sensors in the mattress. You know, those are all users. But then I have sponsors who might not be users, but who might pay for others to use the platform in a B2B world, might insist that others use it. Mm-hmm. I have service providers like the taxi cab driver in an Uber story. Mm-hmm. I have creatives like the experience provider in Airbnb, who's, as I'm staying in a Morocco, Airbnb is giving me a camel ride in the local community for a creative experience. Mm-hmm. I have advertisers and I have rule makers. And so those six, users, sponsors, providers, creators, advertisers, rule makers, those are the construct for me to start brainstorming who should be in my customer coalition of my platform. And then within those six types, I've got personas. So a platform might serve a dozen, two dozen personas. And that's a more challenging customer-centric thought process than one product for one customer. We say it's like a kaleidoscope. I'm using the same APIs and code and data sets to twist the end of the knob of the kaleidoscope and give every persona a beautiful view in my platform so that it makes sense to all of them. So the Uber taxi driver has a different app than I have as a rider. The Uber restaurant owner has a different app. The Uber shipping freight shipper has a different app, but they're all running on common code, all running on common data sets, but customized for that angle of that customer. And so I need to build a customer coalition through my platform through these views that are beautiful to each member of the coalition. So I think that's a really challenging but pivotal play within the playbook of designing an edge through my coalition. And Uber gives a great example. They spent their first 4 years of their company bleeding money with a very simple customer coalition: taxi riders, taxi drivers, and riders. Worldwide, every market got to be number one. Bled billions of dollars. And then that CEO left the scene. New management team came in, said, we're going to exit some markets, and the markets where we stay, we're going to build a much richer coalition of product deliverers, restaurant food deliverers, freight shippers. And they built for the first time combinations of things that attract the drivers, attract the users, and built competitive advantage, started to make money and started to gain share. So it was a great example of same company, two different coalitions, two different outcomes to illustrate the power of customer coalition design. So that's a bit of a long answer. Sorry for the length of it, Simon, but that's an example of one of the 24 plays that for me is a really rich one.
Great example. And if we double click on that example, because everybody knows Uber,
yeah.
Would they need to add four additional types of clients? Do they need also the creative one and then the sponsor?
The way that they added creators was through third-party app providers. So they've become an app marketplace now. Mm-hmm. They've also gotten into advertising. Mm-hmm. They've very much enriched their sponsor program of purchasing agents at a business, telling all the employees, if you want to get reimbursed for your expenses and travel, use Uber, because we kind of deal with the company. So they've gone from this rider driver coalition to a much, much richer coalition that has cross synergies between it. And now it's firing much more on all cylinders. Plus, they offer an Uber Pro loyalty program to the driver that's giving them restaurant and rider and product delivery better economics because the drivers utilize more. And now they're offering an Uber One to the consumer where they give me a price discount if I'm using Uber across all my different needs. So they're for the first time, because of the richness of their coalition, able to create distinctions against monoline providers like a DoorDash or like a Lyft. They have a differentiated offer for the first time.
I think this is really smart. We are constantly thinking about two-sided platforms, three-sided platforms, four-sided platforms. Very rarely I find a five-sided marketplace. For example, Visa is one. When I found it, then I invest heavily into that because it's so much more defendable. It's basically unstoppable when you have five. Stakeholders is not strong enough. When you have five groups of people who have skin in the game and want this to win, right? So you are introducing six of those. If you can build something that's wanted by six different groups, that's kind of unstoppable, right?
It's definitely more defensible than classic paired marketplaces. And the programs that you layer on top of that, in Uber's participating in a new type of offer, which we call loyalty as a service, LAS. It's a mind-bending concept. Amazon Prime is a LAS, is a loyalty as a service as well. You, the customer, pay me to be loyal to me. It's bizarre when you state it that way, but it's what it is. But I can offer it. I can only offer it if I have a broad enough product line, which is where the customer coalition design comes in. When Uber has a broad enough product line, it says, pay me $9 a month or whatever the charge is, and I'm going to give you savings that are so much bigger than $9 a month. And I'm going to incentivize you to stay loyal, just like Prime does. I believe Disney will eventually come out with a loyalty as a service program. But it's all about breadth in the customer's journey, that I have a broad package that I can then offer them these savings that more than make up for the subscription price. And then I totally have a loyalty, because I've now invested my money in using that network. And why would I use anyone else? So I become a very, very loyal customer if I layer a loyalty as a service program on top of that multi-sided platform design.
Maybe Ferrari has something like that, because they build different layers. They make it purposefully hard to buy. So if you want to buy a Ferrari, you don't just get a Ferrari. You cannot walk in. There are only 200 distribution places worldwide. When you walk in, you have to show that you can maintain a Ferrari. They ask you, okay, do you have a used one? Show me a picture. How did you maintain it over the years? Can you keep the value of it? Can you savor it? And if you can show all of that, then you can buy your first Ferrari, and you wait for 3 years. You pay in full and wait for 3 years. So that's
amazing.
That's one of those loops that's used in the luxury world, and that it's fascinating.
I would agree. If I could mention one other thing that it connects to, there's another move called From Success to Momentum. And we're used to thinking of customer success as sort of the last stage of somebody makes a purchase, and then I help them become successful in using what they bought, and we're done. This idea of momentum marketing, we're saying that after I get my customer the first time, do I have a program in place? They usually are using part of my platform, but not the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Do I have a branding program in place to brand what it means to become a full platform user from a part platform user? So if I think about Salesforce and the Salesforce Trailblazer program, when I join Salesforce, I get a trailhead, learn how to be a great professional and get ahead in my career program. I get an amazing community of trailblazers, and I'm being branded as to what it means to be a trailblazer in life. And so, do I want to be a trailblazer, not just a user of Salesforce? There's a second brand running in parallel to the product brand, which is the community brand. And that community brand is tied to full platform use. And so we see this, we call it the second top of the funnel. After I become a customer, a part of the platform, the second top of the funnel is to then begin to brand all over again what it means to be a full platform user. So momentum marketing, not cross-selling, I'm not monetizing yet, but I'm getting the customer to lean forward with the desire to be fully engaged in my platform. That's a new discipline in go-to-market at that moment in the customer journey. And it's tied into this idea of, do I have a broad enough offer set up so that then I can really tell the customer what it means to be all in on my platform? And my guess is Ferrari is operating in that same spirit that Salesforce Trailblazer is in the example I gave.
This is fascinating. I'm thinking of so many clients and how they might use these principles right now, and many listeners. And there is the element of gamification here. You're basically creating levels like Super Mario levels, like level 1, 2, 3. Hey, there is another one. Hey, there is another one. We can get there together.
Yep. Exactly.
And you're also raising status, which we marketeers always wanted to do, right? If our product can raise their status, help them celebrate what they want to accomplish anyways, but then also celebrate it and say, wow, you are amazing now. That's a loop we want to find.
It's really made possible because I can be in touch. I can be present with the customer as they're using. That's really the first moment I've had as a marketer to do exactly what you described, to begin to badge, to begin to gamify full platform use, because the visibility that I get through a platform is what enables me to play that game well. If I didn't have any visibility, I'd be guessing. I'd be like throwing darts with a blindfold on. But with platform visibility, I can become very data-driven, very artful, and very precise in how I support and encourage the customer.
And double-clicking into the Salesforce example, to me, the product is at best mediocre compared to peers. If you compare it to HubSpot or others, I think the product is mediocre. But the way they build community around it is excellent.
That's right.
And I'm invited to those events. They have a full team with a standardized event. They set it up in a city. They rock it. And they move to the next city. They build everything. They rock that city. Yes. It's a machine. It's an event machine. And it's a community-driven marketing, I think.
It is. So there are really three what we call post-purchase disciplines in a platform world. One of them is momentum marketing. I spoke about it. Another one is catalytic communities. You're referring to it right now. And then the third is in-use enrichment, adding value as the customer uses in real time through intelligence, through advice, through on-demand community access for help. And if you put those three together, they're really three disciplines that didn't exist digitally before 2010. So we've had more than 100 years to build the discipline of top of the funnel marketing. We've had about 10 years to build the discipline of post-purchase marketing. And so the part of what we try to do is explain these new disciplines and offer readers or advisors a pathway to how to gain best practice excellence in these new areas that can be so impactful. And then, Simon, to your point, all the data that you collect in those three disciplines, if you're collecting data, collecting customer telemetry, then when the customer comes back around to make their next choice and you're ready to give them their next offer of how to expand their relationship with you, and they should have energy to lean forward in their relationship with you. And that's what builds higher customer lifetime value. So Nike does a great job of this. When I go to look at tennis shoes on a Nike website, tennis shoes, sneakers, et cetera, sports apparel, that very old fashioned term, I'm not only shown the coolest shoes, but I'm asked to join a community at the moment. And the Nike community is part of what's now the brand of Nike, not just Nike. And as I move through the journey, I've got four different communities I can join: Nike Fitness, Nike Run, Sneakerheads for the sneaker collector, and Nike Events. And they found that people who join two or more communities have a 4x lifetime value multiplier from people who don't. So making that a machine in the best sense of the word, a systematic go-to-market approach, can transform my economics of the customer.
It's fascinating. You know, I have three kids, and if you ask my kids, tell me one fashion brand, they will tell you just Nike.
Wow.
Because, you know, when they need sneakers, I pull my phone and we buy it in the Nike Club. Click this one or that one. Hey, mom, is it okay if we buy this one? Yeah, click both.
Yep. And now I can personalize it. I can put my own local sports team on it. I can use augmented reality, another one of the plays we call reality shifts. I can imagine what it's like to be an owner before I become an owner. You know, Warby Parker sunglasses will do this, Nike will do this. How do I give the customer the experience of being an owner before they take the risk of being an owner? That's something else the platforms can do for me, and it enhances my conversion ratios from lead to sale. We call it lead to sale smoothing. It's one of the 24 plays. And so all of those techniques of engaging me digitally right before the moment of sale to personalize it, to tie it into other social opinion about it, it changes my conversion rates. And then it becomes the choice because the shopping experience is so engaging.
I am so excited. There is so much alpha in this conversation. People, now one word from the sponsors, and then I have some more questions. I love this. I love this. What if your business would run well even when you are on vacation? Discover how 1,600 business owners have regained their freedom using the Strategy Sprints blueprints. How they enjoy living their dream and watching their business scale. Get the exact checklists they use to go from stressed to fulfilled using the Strategy Sprints method. Order your copy of Strategy Sprints 12 Ways to Accelerate Growth for an Agile Business on Amazon today. And if you love it, leave us a review. For more information, head over to strategysprints.com.
I like it.
Let's double click even more into the 24 moves, because you are in San Francisco. So I will ask you about Salesforce instead of Nike.
Sure.
Salesforce, the highest tower in San Francisco, it was the legend. It was the company. And yes, they're doing a ton of things right. Let's community building and momentum. But my assumption from here, from far away, I don't know, but my assumption is young people in San Francisco nowadays, if you ask them, like Wharton alumni like you, yeah. But the fresh Wharton alumni, they get out of Wharton. What's your number one favorite employer? Where do you want to land a job? I would say Salesforce is not top one, because right. There is more needed today than just success.
Yeah.
What are people looking for, and which move talks to that?
Yeah, great question. In Winning Through Platforms, one of the moves is called visibility for good. And we say that platforms not only offer a company visibility into their customer, but it offers the customer visibility into the company, like reverse visibility, maybe into my supply chain, maybe into the unique story as to where the SKU has been as it's made its way to me, or what's going to happen to the SKU after I'm done using it and how it gets recycled. Mm-hmm. And so what I can do through a platform is make it real for a customer. My mission statement, you know, I want to do this XYZ, sustainability, social equity, diversity, etc. I can make that real. You know, I have a beverage machine in my office called Bevy, B-E-V-I. Mm-hmm. It's sparkling water with flavors and caffeine and electrolytes, and I can sort of make my own menu. As I'm pushing the button, filling my glass, it's counting the number of plastic bottles that I'm stopping from being put into the ocean. I feel the social good I'm doing because it's giving me visibility into the impact I'm having. So, you know, the way that Patagonia does that with its customers, giving them a chance through their purchases to participate in what nonprofit they want to help. Mm-hmm. Or we talk about how employers are using a company named Thrive Lights, which gives transient workers, like agricultural workers or low-end gray-collar workers, the chance to, every a few months, click on their living status through pictures. Which picture best fits what your toilet looks like, what your kitchen looks like, what your shoes look like. And they track with different lights how you're progressing economically. Creates a database of social progress, and it lets you light up patterns in progress and then begin to storytell. For those who made progress in this area of their life, how did you do it? And give advice to each other digitally. So you can create communities of meaning around changes in the world that people want to see through platforms, and take it out of the platitudes, which is where it usually sits on the corporate plaque of the wall or on the web HTML page, to actual experience of the customer, that I buy from this company and I experience the social impact I'm having. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is a great way that platforms can up their game when you go to attract talent, which is usually, I want success and I'd like meaning as well, please, as the ask that the talent has.
Oh, I love this. Everybody needs those 24 moves. Come on, people, we need this book, Winning Through Platforms, Ted Moser. And it was a co-author, but there are three authors in total. How did you create the book?
I began with a request from the American Marketing Association. I had a speech I was basically giving about this topic. And a guy who spoke ahead of me at a conference, I liked his speech, he liked my speech. We came up and talked to each other. And he was on the board of the AMA, the American Marketing Association. He said, hey, we're doing a 7-book series on modern marketing. And the speech you just gave is the missing book. I have the other 6 books lined up, but I'm missing this one. And I think I just found it. And he asked me, have you ever written a book before? I said, I wrote one. And he actually uses that book in his college courses still today and likes it. So he's like, all right, we have a deal. Please author this for us. So I agreed to do that. And as I did the work, I'm employed as a senior partner in my day job as a rainmaker in my company. So I find I was moving too slowly. So I asked 2 talented folks to join me in helping to be co-authors and invest their time and effort in the book. So Charlotte Bloom and Omar Akhtar are co-authors with me and have been invaluable colleagues in getting the book to market and making it high quality.
Oh, that's beautiful. And since it's your second book, is there anything about the process of writing a book, promoting a book, where you changed your mind about from the first book to the second book? Because many people now listening are in that situation, writing their first book, second book. Yeah. How should I pick my publisher? How should I promote the book?
Yeah, great question. I'd say there were 2 differences between my book writing experiences. I was co-author on book 1, and the person I co-authored with was heading up the book project. They were sort of the circus manager. And I didn't have to do that. I just was writing. Now, this project, I'm the circus manager, if you will, making the whole thing happen as a project, where my other co-authors are more, writing, creating content for the book. It's 20 years since I wrote the first one. I wrote the first one during the internet shift. Now this one is during the platform shift. They were both paradigm shifts that I thought were interesting enough to write about. So I'm not I have to be a writer every year, but when I'm moved by something that I go, this is a big puzzle to solve, I sort of pull out the pen and try it. So what's changed is the publishing industry during those 20 years. The self-publishing industry is such an ecosystem in its own. I had a bit of a situation where the AMA had already chosen a publisher. So that was choice was made for me, Emerald Publishing, because they're publishing all 7 books as a series. And I have a 600 person firm, profits a 600 person worldwide consultancy. So, and I have a guy named David Ocker who wrote 20 books, who's a colleague of mine, a prophet, who agreed to write the foreword. So we had 3 sets of, we have about 800,000 followers between the AMA, Prophet, and David Ocker that all had a stake in the book. So I think finding partnerships that aggregate and create enough of an ecosystem that then when you launch, you're not on your own shouting out into the world, but you've got colleagues who also care about the success of the book, would be a key success factor, that I would suggest. And then doing it with co-authoring, I found it to be invaluable because, you can think yourself into a corner pretty quickly and can't get out. And having co-authors lets you talk about it and escape your own mental traps and get on, stay at the right level of problem solving in the book.
It's a platform in itself. The book about the platform is a platform in itself. It's so on brand.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. The book is called Winning Through Platforms, 24 Ways to Win. It's Ted Moser, everybody. Get this book. This is better than an MBA. Just the 30 minutes that I could extract from him, this is better than most MBAs that you can get. And the risk reward of buying a book is just, it's amazing. So let's all grab the book. And Ted, thank you so much for sharing this with us and for doing what you do every day. What's the best way to connect to you if people want to connect to you on socials?
If you want to reach out by email, it's tmoser, M-O-S-E-R, at profit, P-R-O-P-H-E-T.com. And then LinkedIn is the best way to reach me socially if you want to follow me. LinkedIn's the best spot to go.
Ted Moser on Simon, LinkedIn, everyone.
I just respect what you're doing as well with strategy sprints. I think it's a great model. So congrats to you.
Thank you. Means a lot. See you soon, Ted. Keep rolling.
Thank you.
Avoid trying to do thousands of things that doesn't work. We have 274 templates for your business success. Reach your ambitious goals with one-on-one sprint coach. We double your revenue in 90 days.
What if your business would run well even when you are on vacation? Discover how 1,600 business owners have regained their freedom using the Strategy Sprints blueprints. How they enjoy living their dream and watching their business scale. Get the exact checklists they use to go from stressed to fulfilled using the Strategy Sprints method. Order your copy of Strategy Sprints 12 Ways to Accelerate Growth for an Agile Business on Amazon today. And if you love it, leave us a review. For more information, head over to strategysprints.com.